produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, artists, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com. It's Friday, April 11th, 2008, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, and this is your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Friday is Cannabis Community Day on the Stash, and coming up after the news, we're speaking with our regular guest, Steve Bloom, the webmaster at CelebStoner.com. We'll be discussing the Democratic presidential candidate's latest stance on medical marijuana, some crazy opinions offered lately by Snoop Dogg about Barack Obama, and Celeb Stoner's Harold and Kumar contest. We'll also break down Steve's tour dates to promote his new book, Pot Culture, The A to Z Guide to Stoner Language and Life. Next, Cannabis Carrie brings back one of her favorites, the jazz group The Tall Brothers, with their song, You Get Me Too High. These hepcats from British Columbia will get you the right kind of mellow for your weekend. We wrap things up today with director-producer Craig Nisker and writer-actor Chris Iverson, who are here to promote their new film, The Green Goddess, based on the true exploits of Iverson and friends growing 6 football fields worth of marijuana in Switzerland in the 1990s. Finally, don't forget that every Saturday we're now posting the Normal Weekend Music Stash, where you can get all of the last 10 songs from our daily musical breaks in one podcast, suitable for your weekend party pleasure. If you have a song you would like to have featured on our podcast, please send us an email at stash@normal.org. So sit back and relax with your favorite strain and enjoy your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Barack Obama opens up on medical marijuana. Democratic presidential candidate Senator Barack Obama recently toured Oregon with his campaign. In the southwestern Oregon town of Medford, he sat down with the Medford Mail Tribune for an interview.
When it comes to medical marijuana, I have more of a practical view than anything else. I mean, my attitude is that if it's an issue of doctors prescribing medical marijuana as a treatment for glaucoma or as a cancer treatment, I think that should be appropriate because there really is no difference between that and a doctor prescribing morphine or anything else. I think there are legitimate concerns in not wanting to allow people to grow their own or start setting up mom and pop shops, because at that point it becomes fairly difficult to regulate. Again, I'm not familiar with all the details of the initiative that was passed and what safeguards there were in place, but I think the basic concept that using medical marijuana in the same way, with the same controls as other drugs prescribed by doctors, I think that's entirely appropriate. I would not punish doctors if it's prescribed in a way that is appropriate. That may require some changes in federal law. I will tell you that, I want to be honest with you, whether I want to use a whole lot of political capital on that issue when we're trying to get health care faster and the war in Iraq, is Yeah, the likelihood of that being real high on my list is not likely.
But it's safe to say you wouldn't be.
What I'm not going to be doing is using Justice Department resources to try to circumvent state laws on this issue, simply because I want folks to be investigating violent crimes and potential terrorism. We've got a lot of things for our law enforcement officers to deal with.
Senator Obama, people in 12 medical marijuana states are already growing their own. At a time when you are trying to get health care passed, doesn't it make sense to allow people to grow their own medicine as a method of reducing overall health care costs? The only concern anyone has about patients growing medicine is whether that medicine gets diverted to the black market, a condition you as president could alleviate by adding your support to Representative Barney Frank's bills to decriminalize personal marijuana possession at the federal level. Medical marijuana meeting overflows in California. From thetriplicate.com. Citizens packed the Del Norte County Board of Supervisors chambers Tuesday, spilling into the hallways waiting for their chance to speak on a proposal to greatly reduce the amount of medical marijuana people can grow and possess. Today, the county's medical marijuana guidelines allow a person to cultivate up to 99 plants in a 100-square-foot area and possess up to 1 pound of processed pot. The county wants to reduce these numbers to 6 mature plants and 4 ounces. Del Norte County's attorney, Don Henyon, said that the county cannot set limits on medical marijuana possession that are less than what the state allows, which is 6 mature plants and 8 ounces. One of those afforded the opportunity to speak was Doug McCarty, who helped come up with Del Norte County's original plant count and possession limits. He said the 99-plant and 100-square-foot rule was designed following scientific guidelines for plant yield. The amount of marijuana produced by 6 plants would not be enough, he said, and might cause people, such as himself, to seek their medication elsewhere. Quote, "This would force me to get my medication from the streets," McCarty said, something he does not want to do. A cannabis consultant and expert witness hired by local medical marijuana advocates, Jason Brown, echoed McCarty's statements. Quote, "The current system you have right now is scientifically based," Brown said. "The number of plants to determine yield is irrelevant. It's the size of the canopy," end quote. Pot yield is directly correlated to canopy size, he said, and with 6 plants, patients might not be able to grow enough marijuana to sustain themselves. Del Norte County Sheriff Dean Wilson said the number of illegal marijuana grows in the county is increasing, and the temptation to abuse the medical marijuana laws is there because of the street value of weed. As the debate continued, one woman said she exemplifies the reason medical marijuana was legalized in California. She was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and she said her condition continues to get worse. "The cost of electricity hinders her from growing marijuana year-round," she said, "which is what she would have to do if the plant count was lowered. I know there's got to be many people around the country who would be thrilled with 6 plants and 4 ounces. To the uninitiated, 100 square feet of 99 plants sounds incredible. But as the patient in this piece points out, that may be the one outdoor grow she's able to afford for the year." Law enforcement always claims that higher limits lead to corruption and street dealing, and I don't doubt that a tiny few will abuse any regulatory system. However, in my experience with Oregon's 24-plant, 24-ounce limits, I found that the more people grow, the more they share. Fewer people will need the street dealer. Higher limits help remove the medical marijuana patients from the dealer's customer base. Of course, if the county sheriff were really concerned about the high prices of street marijuana tempting medical marijuana patients to sell their crop, then he should be joining LEAP and supporting the end of adult marijuana prohibition. So long as there is illegal street marijuana and semi-legal medical marijuana, there will always be the corrupting influence of prohibition profits tainting the medical marijuana programs. You cannot have a black market running alongside a white market without both becoming a little grayer. Australian bong ban will harm cannabis smokers, users and experts say. The RAND government's ban on bongs will not stop drug use and could have dangerous flow-on effects on the health of pot smokers, according to users and experts. The state government last night passed tough new laws, so anyone selling cannabis bongs or drug implements will face fines of up to $50,000 or 2 years in jail. The laws cover the sale of implements such as hookahs, bongs, cocaine kits, and pipes used to smoke deadly crystal methamphetamine, otherwise known as ice. One local drug expert, Pharmacology Associate Professor Rodney Irvine, said users will seek other ways to inhale smoke, and that could be more dangerous. Quote, "When you close one loophole, another one emerges. A different pattern of use emerges. They'll make them out of anything, obviously. I would say that there's a possibility those alternative homemade ones will have some problems," end quote. Dr. Irvine said smoking through a bong or water pipe was probably slightly less dangerous than using joints or pipes. Quote, "Intuitively, I would say that smoking anything through a water pipe is a better option than smoking it in a joint or a spliff," he said. "If you're smoking tobacco through a water pipe, you've got cooler smoke. If there's cooler smoke, there are less volatile substances, therefore less tar," end quote. Until now, courts had to establish, beyond reasonable doubt, that the person in possession of the equipment intended to use it in connection with preparing or consuming an illegal drug. Your Honor, when that surfer dude came into my head shop, I had no idea he was going to take that triple-chambered, dual-carb, psychedelic, glass art sculpture and use it for smoking marijuana. I'm shocked, do you hear? Shocked. I've always found both sides of the paraphernalia issue somewhat silly. On our side, the defense for head shops is that they somehow aren't selling bongs so long as nobody says the word bong. Every head shop I've ever visited has the sign saying, "Don't say bong," as if they were the knights who say "nee" in the old Monty Python film. One old head shop owner on the Oregon-Idaho border once told me they were functional glass novelty items. On the other hand, banning something because someone might do something illegal with it seems odd, especially when we sell handguns to people. Nobody seems to apply the bong standard to other items. If I went to a hardware store and got myself a baseball bat and a shovel and said to the clerk, "How much for this head basher and corpse barrier?" would it be illegal for him to sell it to me? Unwise, certainly, and I hope he's calling the cops, but it wouldn't be illegal. Besides, it's just a stupid idea because it can't work and solves nothing. We cannabis consumers are like MacGyver when it comes to making bongs. The only ones hurt here are the head shop owners, who were contributing some of our incomes to the local economy and sales taxes, diverting that money instead to apples, paper towel tubes, and tinfoil. We want to remind everyone that Doug Benson's Super High Me movie opens on the West Coast today in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, and Portland, Oregon. Check our blog at stash.normal.org for the theaters and times. And remember that Normal's excited to partner with Doug in the Roll Your Own screenings that are taking place all over the country on 420. Take a look at the list to see if there's a screening near you. And if not, go ahead and set up your own free screening and invite all your friends. More information can be found at superhighmemovie.com.
I smoke lots of weed, man. I plant that big old seed, man. I smoke every strain there is in town. From the super sticky green to the headache maxi brown, I smoke every strain there is around.
I know that I like it. I know that lots of people like it. So let's see what happens if you overdo it.
Do we have any pot smokers here today? Any at all?
My name is Doug Benson, and I'm about to get super high.
The term medical marijuana, you've basically, you drank the Kool-Aid, because there is no such thing as medical marijuana.
I'm going to smoke pot every day for 30 days
and try to remember to film it.
And my movie's going to be called Super High Me,
or Business as Usual. I haven't decided yet on the title.
I'm going to be hospitalized, I think.
Some people call it dope. Some think it smells like burning rope. I tell you, it relieves my...
Well, it's Friday here on The Stash, and as usual, it's Cannabis Community Day, and there's no better person to turn to for all the news and information on the cannabis community than our own Steve Bloom from CelebStoner.com. Steve, welcome back to The Stash.
Hi, Russ. How are you?
Doing great. We got a couple of weekends here before we hit 420, so we got all sorts of stories we're going to cover, but before we do, let's talk a little bit about what's happening for 420 with you guys and the book that you're putting out.
The book is coming out on 420. People are already getting their books if they made a pre-order through Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Powell's Books. So we're hearing from people out there that they're receiving their books, which is great. And so what we're planning on doing, myself and my co-author Shirley Halperin, We're having a kickoff party in L.A. on 420. That's kind of a little private bash that Charlie's putting together. I will be in Colorado for 419, 420, 421. I'm going to be in Boulder on 420. I'll be at the Chiba Hut on 420, and on 419, I'll be at the Chiba Hut in Fort Collins. So my good friends at Chiba Hut, the subway, you know, the sub shop chain that has a marijuana themed menu, has sponsored my trip out there. So I'll be doing a little tour of Colorado. 419 in Fort Collins at the Chiba Hut, 420 in Boulder at the Chiba Hut, and 421 I'll be in Denver. Right now I don't have a place where I'll be appearing, but I'll announce that on my website.
Yeah, we'll have all the details up there at celebstoner.com, and we'll provide links from stash.normal.org. The other thing I noticed up on the site is, well, the big stoner movie coming out this year is going to be the Harold and Kumar Go to Guantanamo, and you've got a contest around that, correct?
Yeah, we do. It's the follow-up, of course, to Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle. I have not seen the movie yet, so I cannot say, you know, whether it's good or bad or what the quality of the movie is. But basically, the storyline is that our good friends Harold and Kumar decide that they want to go to Amsterdam. And similar to the original movie where they spend the whole movie trying to get to White Castle and go through a series of, you know, wacky adventures, same thing happens in this movie. They're on a plane, and they decide to smoke a bong on the plane, some sort of bong they think they're not going to get caught using. Well, because of their complexions, especially Kumar, somebody on the plane, you know, thinks, you know, sees, you know, sort of eyes him as a terrorist, and next thing you know, they think the bong is a gun and or some sort of weapon, and they're being, you know, escorted off the plane and being shipped to Guantanamo. So what we're doing at Celeb Stoner is a contest, a fairly simple contest. There's a prize package that we were offered from, you know, the film company, five prize packages. And they're basically packages that are called campaign kits with a lot of, like, merch around Harold and Kumar for President type stuff. It's kind of a lot of cute items. And so there's a whole little package that that we're giving away to five different people. And they have to answer one question. People seem to have a little bit of a hard time with this question. So, they have to work a little bit to get the answer, which is, what is the name of the oversized bag of marijuana, the one Kumar fantasizes about making love to in Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle?
Oh.
There's a picture on the website with Kumar and the smaller bag of weed that was kind of a prop throughout the first movie. You know, it's kind of a quarter pound bag of weed. And, you know, if people remember, there was this sort of fantasy sequence where he was having sex with this oversized bag of weed that had arms and legs. That was kind of like his woman, you know.
Right.
So when I will give a hint that that when I interviewed Cal Penn Four High Times when Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle came out, Cal told me the name, and
uh-huh.
It was published in High Times, but I'm not going to tell people what issue.
Oh,
so
boy.
But that's where that information comes from, and there may be some other sources on it, but I do know the name. And we've had one winner so far, so we've had, you know, a bunch of people who don't have a clue, but, you know, hey, if you want to win some prizes, you got to think hard. So come to the website and enter the contest.
Well, check out your back collections of High Times magazines and look for that interview. Maybe you can find the information. Now, turning to the Celeb Stoner news, it's been kind of a slow week as far as celebrities go, but in the political arena, it's been quite busy. This has something to do with my home state here in Oregon. I had blogged on this about how our local weekly paper, the Willamette Week, got an interview with Hillary Clinton while she was here in Oregon, and it seems like she's kind of backing away from earlier statements where she said she would end the DEA raids on medical marijuana states. So what did you find out about that issue?
Well, I don't think she really did too much backing away. This is actually a story we posted at the sort of instigation of the MPP. They sent over a press release kind of complaining that Hillary was fudging her views on, I think that was their little headline, on the medical marijuana issue. And so in that interview, she was asked, what would you do as president about the federal government not recognizing Oregon's medical marijuana program as legal? And her answer was, we've got to have a clear understanding of the workings of pain relief and the control of pain, and there needs to be greater research and openness to the research that's already been done. I don't think it's a good use of federal law enforcement resources to be going after people who are supplying marijuana for medicinal purposes. So the next question was, so you'd stop the USDA raids on medical marijuana grows? And her answer is, what we would do is prioritize what the DEA should be doing, and that would not be a high priority. there's a lot of more important work that needs to be done. And then the last question was, should medical marijuana be covered by insurance, which is a great question, especially, you know, to Hillary, who's the, you know, kind of the queen of health care.
Mm-hmm.
And her answer was, I don't have enough information to know anything about that. So I think by giving that kind of answer and the kind of the first line, which was, you know, we need to do more research, you know, instead of saying, hey, listen, there's plenty of research out there. We know that medical marijuana works for a lot of people. You know, she was kind of hiding a little bit behind, let's research it a little bit more. But at the same time, if you look at it clearly, she did say, I don't think it's a good use of federal law enforcement resources to go after people who are supplying marijuana. Presumably that means also people who are using it. And it's not the priority that the DEA, you know, shouldn't be a high priority. So honestly, I didn't think that she did, you know, any serious backpedaling. It's kind of like parsing her words and saying, well, okay, she could have been a little more positive, but honestly, I don't think she was particularly negative. I don't think that would be a reason why, say, marijuana smokers would not want to vote for Hillary. I mean, you know, Celeb Stoner supports, you know, Obama 100%, but, you know, we will on the site, you know, post stories, you know, pro or con, you know, about both candidates, regardless if that's what's in the news. And in this case, I really didn't think Hillary, you know, steered too far off the particular course on the subject.
Well, where I was coming from on this issue is, it seems to me like when you say that it's not a high priority, that kind of implies that it is somewhat of a priority, somewhat of a low priority. And I figure that when she earlier said to the Granite Staters for Medical Marijuana, she had early said that she would end the DEA raids. Now it sounds like maybe she's just willing to postpone them.
They didn't really directly ask, you know, the question about raids, to be honest. So it was, you know, maybe she would have answered that directly if she was asked that.
Yeah,
directly.
We had an interesting story pop up about Obama coming from the mouth of Snoop Dogg, who, of course, is one of the top celeb stoners. Tell our listeners a little bit about this little controversy.
I don't really understand where this was coming from. I mean, let's call this shooting from the hip, because Snoop Dogg was quoted last week in the British paper, The Guardian, claiming that Obama has connections to the Ku Klux Klan. that he has actually...
I'm sorry, I couldn't help myself there.
from the Ku Klux Klan.
Okay.
I mean, first of all, you know, that type of statement is kind of right out of the Karl Rove handbook. You know, coming from Snoop Dogg, it's kind of a shocker. But at the same time, you know, he's not one of the great political thinkers probably out there that we have to really be that concerned about. Yet, you know, he gets a lot of headlines. And so, you know, it blew over pretty fast, but it got picked up by most of the hip-hop websites that, you know, that are news-oriented sites. And I didn't really see it get picked up across the board by, you know, more of the general, you know, People Magazine and Entertainment, you know, E! Online and stuff like that, where you kind of generally see what are the hot, you know, sort of celebrity stories of the day. So it didn't kind of go across the board. But what he did say was that that the Ku Klux Klan gave Obama money. That was one of his biggest supporters. He's saying was, I don't know, past tense. Why wouldn't they be? He asks. The media won't tell you that. They don't want you to know that. They just want you to know that this N befriended this other N who'd be threatening your values. But we all know all presidents lie to get into office. That's their job. And he goes, in America's eyes, the MF's going to be the president. He said, because John McCain can't mess with him, and Hillary Clinton can't mess with him. He's winning over white people, white ladies. he went on to say another, you know, part of that commentary was this whole thing about Bill Clinton being, you know, the first black president, you know, and he says he was the closest we're going to get to the first black president. He's from Little Rock, Arkansas. That's black-dominated world. He's part of us. That's why every day was happy when he was in office. It was just the funnest time in the world. Everything worked. So, I mean, it's an interesting point that, you know, back in the 90s when Clinton was in office, you know, it was a little bit of a friendlier time for the marijuana smoker, I suppose, you know, as opposed to the 8 years of Bush. And also when, you know, Snoop Dogg came up, you know, it was in the 90s, so he kind of like feels, okay, that was, you know, where he, you know, grew, you know, his fame and prominence, you know, came from. And it was during that era, so I guess he has a soft spot for Clinton. But, you know, this idea that, you know, Bill Clinton, you know, I guess African-Americans, you know, were very charmed by him and, you know, felt that he was, you know, in their corner and, you know, plus he was playing the saxophone and kind of being cool guy and, just sort of fit in, you know, with what they thought was the way the president should treat, you know, African Americans. And, you know, presumably he did a good job. I'm not saying he didn't, but it's just kind of absurd to even, you know, use the terminology of, you know, him being a black president. I don't even know where that came from. It's just odd. And it keeps getting played off of because of Obama's candidacy and this little joke about, well, you know, Clinton was already the first black president. And it's sort of not funny, honestly, when you think about it, because obviously he wasn't. And it's, you know, it's really trivializing, you know, what Obama is doing at this point and what he's attempting to accomplish. So someone like Snoop Dogg, I just thought it was highly irresponsible. And I think he owes Barack Obama an apology.
Yeah.
To, you know, you could say what you want about the Bill Clinton black president stuff. That's just, you know, I don't think that's particularly intelligent. But making a comment about Obama receiving money from the Ku Klux Klan is just absurd.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
And harmful to the campaign, you know, if anybody's even think twice to believe it. But, you know, it's almost like you can't make that stuff up. You know, it's almost like a joke, you know, that Snoop Dogg would say. It's almost like a fake news story that somebody came up with just for fun.
Yeah, I had to check to see whether that was coming from The Onion or something.
So I was really disappointed in Snoop. And, you know, I'll just know better, you know, in the future to not take anything he says politically seriously.
Well, Steve, thanks for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash. We got our dose of celebrity politics and entertainment news with World of Cannabis. I want to encourage everyone to check out celebstoner.com and also on Amazon.com. You can get Pot Culture.
A to Z Guide, the Stoner Language and Life. It's coming out on 420. So appreciate everybody going out there and picking up a copy.
All right. Thanks again, Steve.
Hello, I'm Casper Leach, host of Time for Hemp. When our politicians passed the Marijuana Tax Act in 1937, the citizens of the United States had no idea that a new civil war had begun. Now, after more than 7 decades of this war's escalation and spending well over $1 trillion of taxpayers' money, the result has been an arrest record of more than 37 million brothers and sisters for nonviolent drug offenses. Every year, we choose to continue this war. We do so at the cost of well over $69 billion. Add to this, we are building prisons faster than we are building schools. In fact, the prison industry is now one of the fastest growing industries in the United States. We must end this civil war. We can with your help. Please, join LEAP, the Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and become part of the solution to ending the war on drugs. Go to leap.cc and find out how to become a member.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Well, Cannabis Carrie loves to start the weekend off with her favorite BC buds, the Tall Brothers. Today we're going to enjoy a wonderful reefer jazz tune called You Got Me Too High. Actual brothers Thomas and Bill Small are the core of this legendary Vancouver, British Columbia band. Bill helped launch the British Columbia Compassion Club Society that provides low-cost, high-quality organic medicinal marijuana to anyone with a doctor's prescription. Incredibly, Tom started writing music at the age of 8, and both brothers have a long musical resume. Currently taking their inspiration from 30s and 40s reefer tunes gleaned from the archives of Cab Calloway, Ella Fitzgerald, Nat King Cole, and others, the Tall Brothers are the sound of hot jazz in the cannabis community. According to their website, the band's name comes from an old reefer jazz tune called Man with the Jive, where a line exclaims, "Light up, baby, and get real tall." I hope you all have a chance to get real tall this weekend.
Please visit their MySpace page to download and sample some of their uber cool music, or visit 420tunes.ca to purchase their amazing CD. You can get all those links at our website, stash.normal.org. Sit back and enjoy the Tall Brothers with You Got Me Too High.
You get me too high. I overanalyze. If you've ever been too high, then you can sympathize. You get me too high. And I start to fly. If I said some silly thing, then that's the reason why. Shiva, my sativa, you get me too high. Get me too high. It's funny how the sky and each cloud and every moment seem to drift right by. You get me too high. I've never been this shy, but I swear I love you, baby, till the day I die. Shiva, my sativa, you get me too high.
Talking to kids about marijuana, especially if you might be a parent who dabbled a time or two in your youth. So to help you out, get your copy of Dr. Mitch Earlywine's latest book, A Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Dr. Earlywine is an associate professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and an expert on the studies concerning marijuana, its effect on health and society, and the methodology behind the statistics. He is a frequent guest here on our daily audio stash. Dr. Earlywine lays it all out without the propaganda and scare tactics that parents know won't work with teenagers. He presents a rational understanding of cannabis, what it is and what it isn't, and why kids shouldn't be using marijuana. You can order today through Amazon.com or check our links at our blog, stash.normal.org. All right, for Cannabis Community Day here on the Daily Audio Stash, we're turning to some filmmakers that have brought to us a great movie that's going to be coming out, well, the sooner the better. It's called The Green Goddess, and joining us here on the phone is both Chris Iverson and Craig Nisker. So, gentlemen, welcome to the Daily Audio Stash.
Yeah, thank you very much. Great to be here.
Glad to be here.
So let's start with Chris. You're the executive producer. You also co-wrote this movie, and you perform in the movie. What is your part in the movie, and basically, what is the movie about?
Well, the movie's about three characters, Americans, who get busted. The fourth character, the brother of them, gets busted in Humboldt County, California. The other three escape, barely, and move over to Switzerland, where they proceed to grow 6 football fields of cannabis legally, at least they think so, and have all sorts of crazy adventures all around Europe. They visit places like Amsterdam and see the coffee shops, and they go to a big psychedelic trance festival in Germany and they visit a medical cannabis clinic in London. And my character plays a, sort of a cross between, I like to describe him as a cross between Pee Wee Herman and Einstein. He's
okay.
Sort of the mad scientist of ganja.
Okay.
He's a white guy with bleached white hair and a white trench coat.
That sounds like a lot of fun. Now, Craig, you're the director of the film. You also did the editing and the co-producing of the film. And now, is this film presented as a true story, based on a true story? What's the style?
The reality is it is kind of based on Chris. You know, he did end up, you know, going to Europe. So he was running a medical clinic in Portland, Oregon, probably
97.
I was going to say, yeah, so it got over 10 years. And he was in Europe, and the clinic got busted, and he decided not to come back, and there was a warrant out for his arrest. And then he discovered he could grow legally large quantity in Switzerland and started doing that and did it for about, you know, our film was the sixth and last year that it was allowed to happen. Chris knew that, you know, the sort of end of large quantity growing of cannabis was going to be allowed in Switzerland, and decided he wanted to make a movie, and that's kind of how it all came together.
Wow, so
it's like a crazy story.
So Chris, how long had you been in Europe, and tell us what the story is basically based on again?
Well, the story is semi-documentary, but you know, it's only partially based on the work that I did over in Switzerland. And basically, I moved over in 1997 with the intention of spending half the year in Switzerland, seeing about growing these huge fields. Now, when I first got there, I didn't know how big it actually was at the time. And my other plan was to spend the other 6 months of the year back in America running this cannabis buyers club, this medical center. And when the center got busted, I wasn't there, but I had some warrants issued, and I didn't have any money at the time, and didn't know a lawyer, and I knew the patients were okay that, you know, had been involved with it. They had good representation, and everything was fine, so to speak, anyway. So I made a decision to stay over there, and we kept building and building every year in Switzerland. And by the time the year 2001 came around, we had about 28 acres of cannabis growing in five different places around Switzerland. Basically, the police at that point had us to a process where they were now investigating our company, and they told us in 2001 that it was going to be illegal there by the next year, and if 9/11 hadn't happened in America, then they would have already closed the entire hemp industry down in Switzerland. So they gave us a warning, like they, you know, gentlemanly do so there in Switzerland, and we knew that 2002 was going to be the last year, so we pulled out all the stops, and we called a lot of the cannabis media, and through this incredible, crazy backstory, I connected with Mark Schultz, the main producer of the film, Craig and I's partner.
Yeah, that's actually a really cool thing. Mark had, in the year 2000, okay, so this is how old this, I mean, this is the first inception of this project. Mark, who's the producer, decided that he wanted to write the ultimate pothead movie.
Okay.
So he took a three-quarter page ad at considerable expense in High Times magazine, where he said, "I'm writing the ultimate stoner movie. Send me your stoner stories, and if I use them, I'll give you a screen credit and $100.
Okay.
And he got horrible, you know, the stories he got were awful, and he sort of went, "Eh, it was a bad idea, never mind," and he forgot about it. 2 years later, he comes home, and there's a message on his answering machine saying, "Hi, my name's Richard. I'm calling from Amsterdam, and my friend Chris wants to make your movie. You should call him." Mark's like, "This is obviously a wrong number," and he, like, you know, ignores it. And then he gets another call, like, the next day from the same guy saying, "My friend Chris wants to make your movie. You should call him. He's in Switzerland." And Mark's like, "Who are you, and how do you know about my, you know?" He goes, "What movie are you talking about?" He goes, "Oh, 420, the movie." He's like, "How do you know about that?" Because originally that's what he was going to call it. He's like, "Oh, I saw your ad in High Times magazine." And Mark's like, "Dude, what are you, that much of a stoner? You couldn't get off the couch for 2 years? You know, what's up?" Right? He goes, no, I'm a raw foodist and a hemp activist, and so is Woody Harrelson. I saw him on the cover of a back issue of High Times in a used bookstore, so I picked it up. I saw your ad. I told my friend Chris about it. And he said, "If you can find the guy, tell him I'll make the movie." And that's kind of how it all started.
Wow. That's an amazing story. So this is just an independent film, so not a huge budget or production. And how long has this production been going on?
It'll be 6 years in June, and that's our completion date. The film will be complete June 1st. It will be 6 years less a week that we started shooting. The problem with our movie is that everybody forgot to tell me that we didn't have any money, and I started making an epic. And it kind of is turning out really good, so no one's stopping me. The only problem is it just takes a long time to make an epic when you have no money. We shot in 5 countries. We had people from 20 different countries work on the film.
Well, and we started with a budget around $250,000, which is essentially what I had saved up at the time. And by the time we got into our principal photography, filming the scenes, our budget started growing quickly. And now it looks like our budget's going to be 6 or even 7 times what we started.
Mm.
But I think it's important to point out that if Hollywood tried to make this movie, if they actually tried to fly the cast and crew to, you know, several different countries and film over the course of several months and grow those huge fields that we grew, I mean, I don't know what your opinion, Craig, but it would be, you know, a lot of money.
Well, you keep a crew on for 4.5 months. Yeah,
I mean, we're talking $20-30 million probably. So
oh, more.
Yeah, so we got a movie with a really high production value that, you know, basically bankrupted all of us to make the thing.
Well, it's a lot of the things that we're doing in this movement for many people are a labor of love, and I'm sure filmmaking is no different in that respect. And of course, we all can't wait to see the film. So, what is the anticipated release date for the film?
Okay, well, like I said, I'm originally from Toronto, and the Toronto Film Festival is considered to be one of the 2 most important film festivals in the world, and they do like to have Toronto filmmakers in the festival. So we kind of have a good in there. And if we do get in, the world premiere will be like the second week in September, because that's when the festival is. And they only take premieres, North American at a minimum, and world premieres usually they prefer. So we're going to try for that. We'll know that by August the 8th. And also, if a distributor picks us up before that and says, never mind the festival, we need this movie out in the summer, then we're out in the summer. So,
well, that'll be great. And definitely we'll keep in touch with both of you so that we can get that information out to our listeners here on the Daily Audio Stash. We want to support all the independent filmmakers that are trying to tell the growing truth about cannabis. And I'm sure everybody can't wait to see 6 football fields of outdoor marijuana. It must have been a wonderful sight.
You cannot imagine how beautiful it is.
It sure was. It feels like a dream.
And luckily enough, we were fortunate enough to have a crane for 3 days. So when you see the crane shot and that field just goes on like to the horizon and it ends at the Swiss Alps, you're like, okay, where do I go?
That's such a good thing, you know, because I think one of the things that we suffer from is it's been prohibited here in America for so long that people just can't even imagine it, you know, the idea that it's just a plant, that it's just something that we should be farming and that our country was actually, you know, founded on fields of hemp.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great point.
Well, we want to thank Chris Iverson and Craig Nisker for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash. And the movie is The Green Goddess. We're hoping for a premiere at the Toronto Film Festival. We'll keep everyone in touch with that and let you know what happens. Craig and Chris, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. And, you know, people can keep updated if they want to know about the film, greengoddessmovie.com.
Greengoddessmovie.com. We'll have a link to that up on the Stash blog at stash.normal.org so people can find it easily. Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org.
For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with a cannabis quote from Peter Bourne, the former drug czar under President Jimmy Carter. Quote, "We did not view marijuana as a significant health problem, as it was not. Nobody dies from marijuana. Marijuana smoking, in fact, if one wants to be honest, is a source of pleasure and amusement to countless millions of people in America, and it continues to be that way." End quote. Yep, at the end of the 1970s, we were very close to getting federal decriminalization of marijuana for small personal possession. It can only happen with your support. Make sure to call your Congress at 202-224-3121. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for tuning in, and take care of each other, tokers.